Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Well, there is good economic news this morning, and that's not something you can say every day. The economy grew last quarter at an annual rate of 5.7%. Remember, recession is shrinkage. Nearly 6% growth is much faster growth than even normal times in this country. So what gives? Let's talk about this growth number. We'll talk about Ben Bernanke and Tim Geithner's weeks as punching bags on Capitol Hill and more with David Wessel, Wall Street Journal economics editor, who also has a new book all about Ben Bernanke. David, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you.
First, explain this 5.7% growth number. What does it mean?
Well, it means good things, a lot better than what we've seen in any of the last dozen or so quarters. A lot of it came because businesses had to produce more because they don't have enough stuff in their inventories to meet demand. And that's kind of a short-term thing, and so that's not likely to be repeated. And, of course, the economy is benefiting substantially from the Obama stimulus. But it's definitely good news. Almost everything was better than people had been hoping for, exports, consumer spending. It doesn't mean that it's time to take out the champagne corks, though. Most people, most forecasters, and you have to take what they say with a grain of salt, expect the economy to slow down in the current quarter and don't anticipate fast enough growth to bring the unemployment rate down very fast.
Yeah, in fact, I think people are confused by that. What a large growth number like that means when taken with rising unemployment. In fact, another number that I'm sure you saw released today is that wages and benefits rose in 2009 by the smallest amount on record going back 27 years. But that means 2009 is a year where the stock market went up 70% after March, and we now see this 5.7% growth going into 2010. Is it some kind of redistribution of wealth from workers to owners?
Well, there's some of that going on. When companies can sell more stuff, but they don't have to hire a lot more workers because they figured out how to do without them, and they don't have to pay their existing workers more money, then those sales go to the bottom line. And so that's why some companies are showing much better profits than they had last year. And when profits go up, the price of the stock goes up because that makes stockholders happy. So there's definitely some of that. But it's also, there's a kind of a chicken and egg thing here first. So stock market tends to move before the rest of the economy. So it's worth remembering that may be telling us that there are better times ahead. Maybe not. The stock market's been having second thoughts the last couple of days. But I think the other thing that's important to remember is that if the economy were going to grow at 5.7% annual rate for the next 2 years, unemployment would come down. But if the economy only grows at about 2.5% or 3%, then that's just fast enough to prevent unemployment from going higher, but it's not fast enough to get businesses hiring more workers. Because every day, new workers come into the job market, and the economy has to grow to absorb them before it can bring down the unemployment rate. And that isn't happening yet.
David Wessel, economics editor of the Wall Street Journal and author of In Fed We Trust, Ben Bernanke's War on the Great Panic. And we'll get to Bernanke, but we saw the pressure, or at least incentives, to create jobs from President Obama in the State of the Union address. One of the proposals is a $5,000 tax credit for each new hire from eligible businesses. And here is a reaction to that, a negative reaction, from John Brown, vice president of the family-owned Brown's Furniture Company in Shawnee, Oklahoma, speaking on The Takeaway this morning.
You know, there's only so much to do. I'm not going to hire somebody just for a tax credit. Their salary is going to cost me a lot more than $5,000. And while I think every little bit may help a larger company or a larger employer, it certainly isn't going to help me hire a new person. And we only have three employees. The taxes are not that much. I mean, payroll taxes are somewhere just below 7%. It would take about 15 new hires to be able to get one free employee.
So both on the payroll tax incentive for giving people raises and on the $5,000 tax credit for hiring new employees, that one business owner speaking on the takeaway today is skeptical. And let's go back to our small business owner listeners. We took calls from some of you last hour when we had a bank CEO on about credit and loans that you're not able to get. Is there any small business owner listening right now who would be put over the top to hire a new person for a $5,000 tax credit? Anybody who would, call us up, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. We would love to hear from you because there are a lot of stories, frankly, like John Brown's in the media right now, or any other small business owner to react to President Obama's job creation programs as he began to outline them in the State of the Union. 212-433-WNYC, small business owners, 212-433-9692. And we are with David Wessel from The Wall Street Journal. David, how would that work? I mean, if, you know, if a hire with a normal, you know, even a low salary plus benefits costs at least $30,000 a year, how is the $5,000 going to make that difference?
Well, look, there's two ways to think about this. One is there are a lot of people in the Obama administration who weren't very enthusiastic about this approach, which is why the president didn't propose it sooner. So there's a lot of concern that you end up spending a lot of taxpayer money, and the only people who hire new workers are the ones who would have hired them anyways. So that's on one side. On the second side, we had a tax credit of $7,500 or $8,000 to get people to buy houses. And even though houses cost, even in outside of New York and Washington, $150,000, $200,000, $250,000, that made a big difference. The way these programs work is a lot of people won't take advantage of them, but somebody who was thinking about hiring a new worker but is a little bit uneasy and you know, he almost put the ad in the paper, but he was hesitant, and then the government said, here's $5,000, and that pushes him over the edge. That's the theory, that you get the marginal person in. But look, I think this is largely political. The president realizes that people are very upset that the banks got bailed out and we have 10% unemployment, and they have kids graduating from college, and they're not sure they're going to be able to get a job in June. And he and the Democrats in Congress know they have to do something. And this is the something they came up with. And I think that's much more.
Let's see who we got. Do we have anybody? How about Dylan and Harrison? Dylan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi.
What kind of business do you own?
I own an IT services business called Geeks on Wheels.
Mm-hmm.
We're
good name.
Based in Westchester.
Geeks
we
on
provide
Wheels.
Computer services.
Great. So you drive to your customers, I presume.
Yes, we specialize in on-site service. We mostly go out to our customers.
So you're Geeks on Wheels, and?
And for us, the credit would be excellent. We're right on the edge of being able to bring on another person, but in this scary economy, you know, we have weeks that are up and weeks that are down, and a little extra help with paying someone would be excellent for us.
All right, Dylan, I hope it works out. Thank you. And Sasha in Princeton, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sasha.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to say that I'm really excited about the possibility of getting $5,000 to hire someone. I own a rather large hair salon. We have about 45 employees. And we have a pretty big support and admin team that we've been really squeezing over the last 12 months in terms of productivity. And I think it would be a tremendous win for me as the business owner to get the $5,000 credit. And it would take a little pressure off the team that has been forced into a really high level of productivity. And it would be a win for the person getting a job.
It's still going to cost you tens of thousands of dollars more per person, right?
Yeah, but I think if we could pull back a little bit on how we're pressuring the admin team right now, I think over time, not immediately, of course, they've been producing and isn't that fantastic, but I don't think it's a long-term, it's not a way to live, and it's not the way I want to run my business long-term. I think over time, everyone would be more productive as a larger group if they had a little bit taken off by adding another team member.
Sasha, thank you. And we'll do one more. Here's Artie in Warren. Hi, Artie. What kind of business do you have?
Hi, photography retouching studio. Uh-huh. And I have two, one here in New York, one out in Colorado. And one of the things that we do a lot of, we use a lot of contract workers as well, and freelancers, and you know, an incentive to bring someone on with a tax credit may help make the decision to bring someone on full time rather than spending more per rates using outside people,
right,
or outside vendors.
Right, rather than using vendors, you could bring on an actual employee with benefits. All right, Artie, thank you very much. So, David Wessel, some interesting stories, different kinds of business. Boy, that woman in Princeton, she must do a lot of hair with 45 employees, huh?
I guess so. Lots of things have changed over the last 100 years, but it still takes just as much time to get a haircut as it used to.
Right. Which brings us to our next topic, the haircut that Goldman Sachs did not take with their loans to AIG. And here is an excerpt. Here is an excerpt of the kind of drubbing that Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner got when he testified before a House committee this week about why he was willing to use tax dollars to repay AIG's creditors, like Goldman Sachs, 100%, rather than making them share in the losses.
You scalped the folks on Bear Stearns. 2 cents on a dollar they got. 2 cents on a dollar. The folks at Goldman Sachs got 100 cents on a dollar. And that is just unacceptable. You could have done the right thing by those people, by the American taxpayer, because their money was being put into this deal.
Congressman,
and it just stinks to the high heaven what happened here.
It was Congressman Stephen Lynch, Democrat from Massachusetts. We strung two clips together of two different moments of him grilling Geithner. But David Wessel, do you understand it? Can you explain it to our listeners? You're laughing?
Let's see. Do I understand it? And the answer is I don't fully understand it, but I'll try and explain it. So
that's your job, with full disclosure.
Look, here's the deal. So the Federal Reserve and the Treasury have basically agreed to take over AIG in September 2008 without a lot of preparation, and they do it in a very clumsy way. And they hope that they can basically lend the company some money, sell off the pieces, and get their money back. It turns out to be a much worse economy than they anticipate, and AIG turns out to be hugely more complicated than anything they had imagined. AIG had built a kind of casino on top of its insurance companies, and the casino didn't have enough money to pay off the people who had placed bets, Goldman Sachs, Deutsche Bank, Merrill Lynch, Societe Generale. And so the Fed then has a decision. Okay, what do we do here? Do we pay off the bets, or do we refuse to pay off the bets, even though we're not sure we have the legal authority? Or do we kind of look these guys in the eye and say, look, the world's falling apart. You gotta ante up here a little bit. We'll see you halfway. And Geithner's testimony basically says, we thought about all these things. The world was in really bad shape. We didn't think we had the legal authority to not pay the bills. And Congressman Lynch, who you quoted earlier, basically says, give me a break. You didn't have the legal authority to do half the things you did, but that didn't stop you. He says we couldn't negotiate because the other side knew that we weren't willing to pull the emergency button and take AIG into bankruptcy, and that's the only way you can get people to take less than 100 cents in the dollar.
I guess, but
so
they could have.
We decided to do the best thing we could and pay the 100 cents.
They could have taken it into federal receivership, nationalized it temporarily, and broken it up and split it off. Right? I mean, regular investors had to take a bath, never mind a haircut, on other bailouts like for GM.
Well, wait a minute. So GM went bankrupt. And so we have a legal process for doing that. AIG did not go bankrupt. They put Lehman Brothers into bankruptcy, and we had a catastrophe. So their decision, like it or not, was the world cannot afford another bankruptcy of a big American financial institution, AIG much bigger than Lehman Brothers, and many more international tentacles. So once they make that decision, things get complicated. The question is basically, could they, because we were in a crisis, and because Goldman Sachs and Deutsche Bank and everybody were kind of afraid of Tim Geithner and Ben Bernanke and Hank Paulson, have just said to these guys, look, screw the law, We all know what the law is here. This is what we need you to do for the good of the country and the good of the world. Take 80 cents on the dollar. And frankly, I think in retrospect, I bet Goldman Sachs and the rest of them probably wish they'd done that and weren't now seen as the villains, because they're going to get hit three times harder by Congress and the voters than they would have had they done that. But I think, and Geithner said something yesterday, and Paulson, or the other day, and Paulson said the same thing, and I really do think you don't have to be an apologist to say that there's a lot going on in this period, and they are trying to do the best thing they can, and they probably made some mistakes. They definitely made some mistakes. But the accusations that somehow they were, their motive was to take care of Goldman Sachs, I just don't think that's supported by the facts.
David Wessel with us, economics editor of The Wall Street Journal and author of In Fed We Trust, Ben Bernanke's War on the Great Panic. And I guess the congressional message, the Senate's message with their 70-30 vote to re-up Bernanke for another 4 years this week was, thank you for saving the economy, but you're a bum. Now get back to work.
Yeah, basically. I thought when you were talking about haircuts, you were going to talk about Ben Bernanke, of course, who has no hair on top, although he has a pretty nice beard.
He could save a lot of money on haircuts.
Look, here's the deal. You're exactly right. They didn't have the guts to fire the guy. Some of them actually said, I want to fire the guy, but I'm kind of afraid of who would take his place, or I'm afraid that the markets would react adversely. So they confirmed him. He got 30 no votes. The last time we had a controversial Fed chairman was 1983, when Paul Volcker had raised interest rates very high to break the back of inflation. He got only 16 no votes. So in the end, they wanted to be angry at him, but they didn't have the guts to fire him, so they gave him another 4 years.
And what comes next for Bernanke and the Fed?
I think they got a pretty tough situation now. The Fed likes to pretend that it's somehow above partisan politics. And it cherishes its independence to make interest rate decisions, to do what it thinks is in the best long-term interest of the economy, even if it's doesn't make the politicians who have to run for re-election happy. This calls into question whether they have kind of the legitimacy to do that. And so it'll be difficult for them to make the right calls without keeping an eye on, if we do this, will we make Congress unhappy and they'll take it out on us some way? And if we don't do it, will the markets decide that we don't have the spine to stand up to Congress, and so they'll worry more about inflation? And the second thing is, Congress is thinking about lots of changes to the law, many of them the Fed doesn't like. And this makes it all the harder for them to fight those changes. They have to do with how much authority the Fed has over banks, how much freedom the Fed has to avoid congressional second-guessing on interest rates. And on all these things, the spectacle of a Fed chairman who got re-upped only because the Obama White House came in and did a full-court press and Warren Buffett called Senator Ben Nelson of Nebraska and said, please give this guy a second term, doesn't make it look like he has the support of the political leadership of the country.
I got one more clip for you. I think
okay.
You'll find this interesting. Maybe you heard it anyway. From our program Marketplace this morning, it's George Soros interviewed at the Davos Economic Conference. Soros, of course, is a big backer of the Democratic Party and progressive politics, as well as being a big investor. But he apparently doesn't support Obama when it comes to new regulations on the banks. Listen.
Look, I'm not advocating extensive regulations because regulations are also imperfect, not only markets, but regulators are even more imperfect than markets because they are bureaucratic. And what is worse, they are subject to political pressures. You see, it's unfortunate the way things have worked out, that in fact this pressure for regulation is driven by anger. It should not be. It should be something much calmer and more rational.
So, Mr. Progressive George Soros saying, calm down, don't be so politically angry. Does that clip surprise you?
Well, a little bit. You know, George Soros is both very intellectually interesting, has lots of ideas, some of which I understand, some of which I don't, and also is a big player in the markets. And so you have to always think about which one of his hats is he wearing. nobody in their right mind thinks that we're going to find some genius philosopher king regulators who are going to fix everything and prevent a repeat of this crisis. No one can ever. That's unrealistic. All we can do, it seems to me, is to say we need better guardrails on this highway. The guardrails were inadequate. But making sure we have the right guardrails and that we don't make the finance so clumsy that it can't make the economy prosper would be a mistake. And getting the balance right, how much do we want to reduce the risk of crises, and how much do we want to allow people to take risks that could provide, you know, millions of jobs and a better life for people around the world? That's a really tough balance. It's both a political question of what risk we want to take, but also once you decide what you want to do, getting it right and not having unintended consequences is impossible.
David Wessel, economics editor for The Wall Street Journal, author of In Fed We Trust, Ben Bernanke's War on the Great Panic. David, good job. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, coming up next. America in denial about our diabetes epidemic. And then, among other things, we will read you the results, or we'll bring Amanda Mickle back and bring you the results of the crowdsourcing project that some of you are engaging in right now, finding out who's paying for members of Congress to go to the Super Bowl. And if you still want to participate in that, go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show.